3. Marya Timofyevna's room was twice as large as the one occupied by the captain, and furnished in the same rough style, but the table in front of the sofa was covered with a gay-coloured tablecloth, and on it a lamp was burning. There was a handsome carpet on the floor. The bed was screened off by a green curtain which ran the length of the room, and besides the sofa, there stood by the table a large, soft easy-chair, in which Marya Timofyevna never sat, however. In the corner there was an icon, as there had been in her old room, and a little lamp was burning before it, and on the table were all her indispensable properties. The pack of cards, the little looking-glass, the song-book, even a milk-loaf. Besides these there were two books with coloured pictures. One, extracts from a popular book of travels, published for juvenile reading, the other a collection of very light, edifying tales, for the most part about the days of chivalry, intended for Christmas presents or school reading. She had, too, an album of photographs of various sorts. Marya Timofyevna was, of course, expecting the visitor, as the captain had announced. But when Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch went in, she was asleep, half reclining on the sofa, propped on a woolwork cushion. Her visitor closed the door after him noiselessly, and, standing still, scrutinized the sleeping figure. The captain had been romancing when he told Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch she had been dressing herself up. She was wearing the same dark dress as on Sunday at Varvara Petrovna's. Her hair was done up in the same little close knot at the back of her head. Her long, thin neck was exposed in the same way. The black shawl Varvara Petrovna had given her lay carefully folded on the sofa. She was coarsely rouged and powdered as before. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch did not stand there more than a minute. She suddenly waked up, as though she were conscious of his eyes fixed upon her. She opened her eyes and quickly drew herself up. But something strange must have happened to her visitor. He remained standing at the same place by the door. With a fixed and searching glance, he looked mutely and persistently into her face. Perhaps that look was too grim. Perhaps there was an expression of aversion in it, even a malignant enjoyment of her fright, if it were not a fancy left by her dreams. But suddenly, after almost a moment of expectation, the poor woman's face wore a look of absolute terror. It twitched convulsively. She lifted her trembling hands and suddenly burst into tears, exactly like a frightened child. In another moment she would have screamed, but Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch pulled himself together. His face changed in one instant, and he went up to the table with the most cordial and amiable smile. "I'm sorry, Marya Timofyevna. I frightened you coming in suddenly when you were asleep," he said, holding out his hand to her. The sound of his caressing words produced their effect. Her fear vanished, although she still looked at him with dismay, evidently trying to understand something. She held out her hands timorously also. At last, a shy smile rose to her lips.
"How do you do, Prince?" she whispered, looking at him strangely.
"You must have had a bad dream," he went on, with a still more friendly and cordial smile.
"But how do you know that I was dreaming about that?"
And again she began trembling, and started back, putting up her hand as though to protect herself, on the point of crying again. "Calm yourself. That's enough. What are you afraid of? Surely you know me," said Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, trying to soothe her. But it was long before he could succeed. She gazed at him dumbly, with the same look of agonizing perplexity, with a painful idea in her poor brain, and she still seemed to be trying to reach some conclusion. At one moment she dropped her eyes, then suddenly scrutinized him in a rapid, comprehensive glance. At last, though not reassured, she seemed to come to a conclusion.
"Sit down beside me, please, that I may look at you thoroughly later on."
She brought out with more firmness,
evidently with a new object. "But don't be uneasy. I won't look at you now. I'll look down. Don't you look at me either until I ask you to. Sit down," she added, with positive impatience. A new sensation was obviously growing stronger and stronger in her. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch sat down and waited. Rather a long silence followed.
"It all seems so strange to me," she suddenly muttered, almost disdainfully. "Of course I was depressed by bad dreams, but why have I dreamt of you looking like that?"
"Come, let's have done with dreams," he said impatiently, turning to her in spite of her prohibition, and perhaps the same expression gleamed for a moment in his eyes again. He saw that she several times wanted very much, in fact, to look at him again, but that she obstinately controlled herself and kept her eyes cast down.
"Listen, Prince," she raised her voice suddenly. "Listen, Prince."
"Why do you turn away? Why don't you look at me? What's the object of this farce?" he cried, losing patience. But she seemed not to hear him.
"Listen, Prince," she repeated for the third time in a resolute voice with a disagreeable, fussy expression. "When you told me, in the carriage, that our marriage was going to be made public, I was alarmed at there being an end to the mystery. Now I don't know. I've been thinking it over, and I see clearly that I'm not fit for it at all. I know how to dress, and I could receive guests, perhaps. There's nothing much in asking people to have a cup of tea, especially when there are footmen. But what will people say, though? I saw a great deal that Sunday morning in that house. That pretty lady looked at me all the time, especially after you came in. It was you came in, wasn't it? Her mother's simply an absurd, worldly old woman. Mr. Lebyadkin distinguished himself, too. I kept looking at the ceiling to keep from laughing. The ceiling there is finely painted. His mother ought to be an abbess. I'm afraid of her. Though she did give me a black shawl. Of course, they must have all come to some strange conclusions about me. I wasn't vexed, but I sat there, thinking, what relation am I to them? Of course, from a countess one doesn't expect any but spiritual qualities. For the domestic ones she's got plenty of footmen, and also a little worldly coquetry, so as to be able to entertain foreign travellers. But yet that Sunday they did look upon me as hopeless. Only Dasha's an angel. I'm awfully afraid they may wound him by some careless allusion to me."
"Don't be afraid, and don't be uneasy," said Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, making a wry face.
"However, that doesn't matter to me, if he is a little ashamed of me, for there will always be more pity than shame, though it differs with people, of course. He knows, to be sure, that I ought rather to pity them than they me."
"You seem to be very much offended with them, Marya Timofyevna."
"I? Oh, no,"
she smiled with simple-hearted mirth. "Not at all. I looked at you all then. You were all angry. You were all quarrelling. They meet together, and they don't know how to laugh from their hearts. So much wealth, and so little gaiety. It all disgusts me, though I feel for no one now except myself."
"I've heard that you've had a hard life with your brother without me."
"Who told you that? It's nonsense. It's much worse now. Now my dreams are not good, and my dreams are bad because you've come. What have you come for? I'd like to know. Tell me, please."
"Wouldn't you like to go back into the nunnery?"
"I knew they'd suggest the nunnery again. Your nunnery is a fine marvel for me. And why should I go to it? What should I go for now? I'm all alone in the world now. It's too late for me to begin a third life."
"You seem very angry about something. Surely you're not afraid that I've left off loving you?"
"I'm not troubling about you at all. I'm afraid that I may leave off loving somebody."
She laughed contemptuously. "I must have done him some great wrong," she added suddenly, as it were to herself.
"Only I don't know what I've done wrong. That's always what troubles me. Always, always, for the last 5 years.
I've been afraid day and night that I've done him some wrong. I've prayed and prayed, and always thought of the great wrong I'd done him. And now it turns out it was true.
What's turned out?
I'm only afraid whether there's something on his side, she went on, not answering his question, not hearing it, in fact. And then again, he couldn't get on with such horrid people. The Countess would have liked to eat me, though she did make me sit in the carriage beside her. They're all in the plot. Surely he's not betrayed me. Her chin and lips were twitching. Tell me, have you read about Grishka Obtreyev, how he was cursed in 7 cathedrals? Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch did not speak. But I'll turn round now and look at you, she seemed to decide suddenly. You turn to me, too, and look at me, but more attentively. I want to make sure for the last time.
I've been looking at you for a long time.
Hmm, said Marya Timofyevna, looking at him intently. You've grown much fatter. She wanted to say something more, but suddenly, for the third time, the same terror instantly distorted her face, and again she drew back, putting her hand up before her.
"What's the matter with you?"
cried Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, almost enraged. But her panic lasted only one instant. Her face worked with a sort of strange smile, suspicious and unpleasant.
"I beg you, Prince, get up and come in,"
she brought out suddenly in a firm, emphatic voice.
"Come in? Where am I to come in?"
I've been fancying for 5 years how he would come in. Get up and go out of the door into the other room. I'll sit as though I weren't expecting anything, and I'll take up a book, and suddenly you'll come in after 5 years travelling. I want to see what it will be like.
Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch ground his teeth and muttered something to himself.
Enough, he said, striking the table with his open hand. I beg you to listen to me, Marya Timofyevna. Do me the favour to concentrate all your attention if you can.
You're not altogether mad, you know, he broke out impatiently. Tomorrow, I shall make our marriage public. You will never live in a palace, get that out of your head. Do you want to live with me for the rest of your life? Only very far away from here, in the mountains in Switzerland. There's a place there. Don't be afraid. I'll never abandon you or put you in a madhouse. I shall have money enough to live without asking anyone's help. You shall have a servant. You shall do no work at all. Everything you want that's possible shall be got for you. You shall pray, go where you like, and do what you like. I won't touch you. I won't go away from the place myself at all. If you like, I won't speak to you all my life. Or, if you like, you can tell me your stories every evening as you used to do in Petersburg in the corners. I'll read aloud to you if you like. But it must be all your life in the same place, and that place is a gloomy one. Will you? Are you ready? You won't regret it, torment me with tears and curses, will you?
She listened with extreme curiosity, and for a long time she was silent, thinking.
It all seems incredible to me, she said at last, ironically and disdainfully. I might live for 40 years in those mountains.
She laughed.
What of it? Let's live 40 years, then, said Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, scowling. I won't come for anything. Not even with me.
And what are you that I should go with you? I'm to sit on a mountain beside him for 40 years on end. A pretty story. And upon my word, how long-suffering people have become nowadays. No, it cannot be that a falcon has become an owl. My prince is not like that, she said, raising her head proudly and triumphantly. Light seemed to dawn upon him.
What makes you call me a prince? And for whom do you take me? He asked quickly.
Why, aren't you the prince?
I have never been one.
So yourself, yourself, you tell me straight to my face that you're not the prince.
I tell you I never have been.
Good Lord, she cried, clasping her hands. I was ready to expect anything from his enemies, but such insolence, never. Is he alive? She shrieked in a frenzy, turning upon Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch. Have you killed him? Confess! Whom do you take me for? He cried, jumping up from his chair with a distorted face. But it was not easy now to frighten her. She was triumphant. Who can tell who you are and where you've sprung from? Only my heart. My heart had misgivings all these 5 years of all the intrigues, and I've been sitting here wondering what blind owl was making up to me. No, my dear, you're a poor actor, worse than Lebyadkin even. Give my humble greetings to the Countess, and tell her to send someone better than you. Has she hired you? Tell me. Have they given you a place in her kitchen out of charity? I see through your deception. I understand you all, every one of you. He seized her firmly above the elbow. She laughed in his face. You're like him, very like. Perhaps you're a relation. You're a sly lot. Only mine is a bright falcon and a prince, and you're an owl and a shopman. Mine will bow down to God if it pleases him, and won't if it doesn't. And Shatushka, he's my dear, my darling, slapped you on the cheeks. My Lebyadkin told me. And what were you afraid of then when you came in? Who had frightened you then? When I saw your mean face after I'd fallen down and you picked me up, it was like a worm crawling into my heart. It's not he, I thought. Not he. My falcon would never have been ashamed of me before a fashionable young lady. Oh, heavens, that alone kept me happy for those 5 years, that my falcon was living somewhere beyond the mountains, soaring, gazing at the sun. Tell me, you impostor, have you got much by it? Did you need a big bribe to consent? I wouldn't have given you a farthing. Ha 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 ha! Ah! Idiot! Snarled Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, still holding her tight by the arm. Go away, impostor! She shouted peremptorily. I'm the wife of my prince. I'm not afraid of your knife. Knife? Yes, knife. You've a knife in your pocket. You thought I was asleep, but I saw it. When you came in just now, you took out your knife. What are you saying, unhappy creature? What dreams you have, he exclaimed, pushing her away from him with all his might, so that her head and shoulders fell painfully against the sofa. He was rushing away, but she at once flew to overtake him, limping and hopping, and though Lebyadkin, panic-stricken, held her back with all his might, she succeeded in shouting after him into the darkness, shrieking and laughing, "A curse on you, Grishka Optryev!"